Mr. Dillon.
May it please the court, counsel. The issues are very brief, and most of the issues have been covered by my brief. Mr. Hiller was denied disability benefits by the administrative law judge that was upheld by the appeals counsel and subsequently by the district court. There are two fundamental issues: treating the application of the rules and regulations pertaining to treating physicians, and the issue of credibility. More fundamentally, I'd like to address one additional comment or issue before I get into the substance of the brief, and that is that Social Security attorneys throw around these rulings. The briefs contain 96-7P and 96-9P and the rest. And I think a lot of times attorneys who are non-Social Security representatives don't completely understand what those regulations and rulings are all about. The Social Security Commissioner takes the rules and regulations adopted either by Congress or the statutes and creates different regulations and rules. The Social Security rulings themselves are the Social Security Commissioner's own interpretation of its rules and regulations. They then are to apply those at hearing level and to apply those subsequently. In other words, the commissioner is charged with being part legislator, part judge, and part jury. Accordingly, the only thing the practitioner can do is ask for uniform application of the commissioner's own regulations, something that is very seldom seen by those in the trenches. The courts have subsequently interpreted those regulations or those rulings as having some weight in binding the commissioner. In other words, the commissioner has to apply its own ruling, and they're given somewhat of the same force as law pursuant to the Code of Federal Registry. The failure of the commissioner to properly apply its own Social Security rulings is evidence that the decision is not supported by substantial evidence. Now, the first issue is the credibility determination. Why is the credibility determination in Mr. Hiller's case important? Well, first, the ALJ determined that Hiller could perform a limited form of sedentary work. For his age and education and experience, sedentary work would be a finding of not disabled. Somewhat limited would be a finding of not disabled. In order to qualify for benefits, he'd have to be able to perform a full range of less than sedentary work, and that there would have to be, and in this particular case, Hiller testified as to a significant amount of pain related to his three physical conditions: a bad knee that his own doctor described as needing to have knee replacement surgery, a shoulder that could not be repaired, and low back injury and pain that was not treated or could not be treated by surgery. The regulations require that if credibility is an issue, the judges or the ALJs consider the level of disability more severe than that can be determined by the objective medical evidence. In other words, if the objective medical evidence says he's limited to sedentary and he's found credible that he is more limited due to pain than just the objective factors, the ALJ is to take one step down on the guideline and say he is not even able to perform sedentary work. So in other words, in this case, if he was found credible, then he would have been able to perform less than sedentary work and a finding of disability would have been applicable. Now, 96-7P lays out factors that the ALJ is to consider. He's supposed to look at the objective evidence, the daily activities, precipitating and aggravating factors, type, dosage, effectiveness of medication, treatment other than medication, measures used to alleviate pain, functional limitations and restrictions. In this particular case, you can go through the record itself and determine that he had an MRI that showed tears and problems with the shoulder. He had a functional capacity evaluation done by his doctor, which limited him to a significant limitation. He had another MRI done in February that showed L4, L5 disc space narrowing with degenerative disc disease and lumbar instability syndrome, and he was given anti-inflammatory. You can look also at other factors that come into play. DVR, the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation, couldn't even retrain Mr. Hiller because they felt that his medical condition was too severe for him to tolerate any type of prolonged sitting or standing and would not be able to perform anything that would be appropriate as far as employability. His daily activities, it's described in the record as doing household chores that generally take him 2 to 3 hours per day. A look at the transcript at page 106. Those household chores include doing dishes and vacuuming. 2 to 3 hours per day of doing those minimal activities seems that he obviously has a significant amount of time that he has to spend to do these in order to function. It talks of grooming and driving, but yet none of these specific activities are noted or cited by the administrative law judge in the four corners of the complaint. He was given pain medication. He was prescribed Vicodin on several occasions for his back pain. He was given a functional capacity evaluation at Riverview Hospital, which I have submitted to the district court, or to the appeals council and to the district court, showing limitations. As far as the treating physician, Dr. Galick, Douglas Galick, is a orthopedic surgeon in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, and treated Mr. Hiller for his knee and for his shoulder. Dr. Galick provided a letter report indicating that Mr. Hiller could not perform overhead activities involving 5 pounds, no repetitive nature activities over his head, no pushing and pulling using the right shoulder, and maximum pushing and pulling of 20 pounds. He wrote in his DVR letter that he was not to tolerate any prolonged period of standing or walking, and certainly no carrying. And he was to be seated most of the time. If you look at, as I've indicated, 83-10, Social Security ruling, that ruling states that the remaining exertional capabilities must be sufficient to allow the performance of all of the, or nearly all of the primary strength activities defined in that particular level of exertion. In other words, he has to be able to perform the full range of sedentary work, or he is required to take the step down. In this particular case, he did not apply Dr. Galick's findings. And doctors are to be given controlling weight if they are supported by the medical or by medically accepted laboratory diagnostic techniques. In this particular case, that was not followed. Instead, the commissioner argues that the weight of the treating physician is only to be given weight if the record is, or the treating physician's report is consistent with the record. Instead, the weight of the physician is to given, be given substantial weight and only disallowed if it's not supported by the record. It's a very major distinction, but one that repeatedly is misstated by the commissioner in most of its briefs. I'll reserve the remaining portion for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Peterson.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Danielle Pedersen on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I empathize with this court for sitting through 2 Social Security cases in a row, so I plan to be very brief this morning. I would like to note...
Oh, we have 3 immigration cases coming up.
I would like to note, counsel has sort of snuck in a reference to the functional capacity assessment that was submitted after the time of the ALJ's decision. I want to note again that was not evidence in front of the ALJ, can only be considered by this court for purposes of Senate 6 remand. I'm not going to waste any more of this court's time on the Senate 6 issue. I believe it's very clear in our brief why this evidence is not new under the legal standard. It's certainly there's been no good cause advanced for why it was not given to the ALJ, and it's most certainly not material. I'd like to make just a few comments about the ALJ's credibility assessment in this case. This court has repeatedly held that an ALJ is not required to discuss each and every credibility factor, and certainly we see that the ALJ did not discuss each and every credibility factor here. What he did do, however, was build a sufficient bridge for this court to go from the evidence in the record to the conclusions that he reached. The most important and compelling piece of evidence, I think, in this case, and one which counsel has carefully omitted from every discussion of the daily activities, is the fact that this gentleman has continued to work throughout the relevant period of time. Although the ALJ found these jobs were not substantial gainful activity, as that term is defined by the regulation, he nonetheless was performing very heavy exertional work, most notably as a maintenance worker, at least 3 months prior to the time of the hearing, and we know he continued to perform that work for at least another 3 months through the time Dr. Chu, who was his treating physician for his back, released him to return to that very heavy work at the end of February 2002. Certainly, a man who is capable of that type of work is capable of a very, very limited range of sedentary work, and by his own admissions in the transcript, he proudly informed the ALJ he had not missed a single day of work because of his impairments, and I think that's important in this case. The ALJ did consider that work activity, but what he did properly in this case was balance that work activity with the other evidence of record, and that other evidence comes from these physicians. These physicians, other than Dr. Chu, who did eventually release Mr. Hiller back to heavy work, limited him generally to sedentary and light activities, and in balancing those opinions with the work activity and the other activities, the ALJ came to a very fair compromise in this case and found Mr. Hiller capable of a very limited range of sedentary work. Counsel makes much in his briefs and again in front of this court about the standards for weighing a treating physician opinion and the weight to which a physician opinion is entitled, and he's absolutely right about all those things. What he keeps seeming to miss here is that Dr. Galick's opinion, the functional capacity restrictions he set forth are entirely consistent with the ALJ's RFC. The treating physician said limited range of sedentary, the ALJ said limited range of sedentary. There is no medical opinion in this record that is at odds with the RFC. The ALJ's findings are amply supported in this case by the objective medical evidence, which showed relatively minor problems, the ongoing work activity, the opinions of four different physicians, including two treating physicians, and although he admittedly did not discuss all the activities that Mr. Duncan has set forth, he certainly did note his continued ability to hunt and fish. In light of all the evidence of record, which this court should be examining to decide whether the ALJ's decision is supported, we feel that you will come to the conclusion here that the district court did, that the ALJ's decision is amply supported by substantial evidence of record, and that you will affirm the commissioner's decision in this case. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Duncan?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner concedes the issue regarding the treating physician, but yet ignores the argument that was made in my reply brief. Dr. Galick specifically limited this individual to 5 pounds of lifting with that right shoulder, and indicated in his report to DVR less than the 2 hours of standing required for a definition of sedentary work. Sedentary work, by definition, is 10 pounds. So to say that the Dr. Galick's report is the same as the findings of the commissioner through the ALJ is erroneous.
And is that the only inconsistency you can specifically identify?
Yes, but as I've indicated, that's a significant distinction. Because that rules out the ability to perform the sedentary work that the administrative law judge found. If the court agrees on that point, then he is limited to less than sedentary work, and pursuant to the regulations, he is disabled. And that is the standard that attorneys have to try to get over that hurdle in order to accomplish these benefits for their client. I would also just briefly point out that the credibility findings. Yes, Mr. Hiller attempted to hunt and fish. In northern Wisconsin, that's like breathing. There's a letter in the file pertaining to that indicating even that activity was substantially less than he was able to do.
I thought only eating cheese qualified for that description in Wisconsin.
Well, Mr. Hiller worked as a cheese maker.
Yeah, preferably.
He was breathing cheese as well.
The other adage is beer and bratwurst. So,
and
thank
bowling.
You. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.